SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. You're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. We've reached that point in the week where we get to wrap up the Breeders' Cup coverage, but it's a big but, not before we have a few more opportunities to get perspective. It's got a nice, lineup. In addition to the recapping, we'll also get into the weekend. And the weekend, you know, sort of getting back into the flow. And yeah, that includes some Churchill and Aqueduct. Laurel. Let me get Laurel in because they've got a couple of notable two-year-old stakes. You got the Lewis and the Smart Halo. They both drew pretty well. Don't know if we'll dive in deep. Maybe Scully will be with us. Maybe Scully glanced at Laurel. We've got the cross-country pick fives continuing, and we'll slip in a tale of annoyance from yesterday in a minute. We go over some results, but continues today. I'm going at it again, waiting for some scratches. New York is off the turf, and four races come off the grass as a result. So FYI on that, and that includes the second, fifth, third, sixth. No, that's, I'll tell you what, I'm striking out every direction. Where is this? Come on, where's Thursday? There it is, Thursday. No, that's Thursday. What's wrong with me? Today's Friday. That's underneath. It's underneath the Churchill. Here we go. I tweeted it. All I had to do was look at my tweet. The first, the third, the fifth, and the eighth come off the turf. And there's MTOs pretty well represented in each. So fields should hold together, and particularly that eighth race, which is part of today's cross country. Today's cross country, Aqueduct sixth. Boy, you're off to a great start. Aqueduct seventh, Churchill sixth, Aqueduct eighth and ninth, Churchill ninth. All right. And then tomorrow it's a mix. I thought that tomorrow they might mix in the stake. You know, with the Mrs. Revere, but they didn't. They're using earlier races tomorrow at Churchill as part of the pick five. And in New York, we do have two stakes. We've got the Notebook and the Artie Schiller. A very good card in New York tomorrow. And I think we're okay. I think the weather is going to keep passing, and I know we're getting a little bit of light rain at some point, but you know, the two turf courses in Aqueduct, and we're, you know, we've only got probably 2 weeks left, you would think. We have sometimes gotten into the first week in December, but you got those two beautiful turf courses at Aqueduct, and you know, let's try to slip a few in here before the snow blankets the region. All right. A couple of quick news hits. Sale numbers continue to be very solid. Mares and foals, mares and weanlings going good. Brisk, pretty brisk trade. So it's holding its own. Good news there. I'm not going to dive into all the specifics. The other piece of news, and I'm sure we'll go over it. It'll come up with, I know, with later with Jay Privman and maybe with Marty, who's going to join us first. Marty joins us in about 7-8 minutes. Yesterday afternoon, if we got off the air, not sure why this had to, you know, be put out in a attention seeking manner, but Sacatoga, you know, announcing, confirming 'tis the law's 4-year-old season, looking to start with Pegasus. And, you know, obviously, you know, the assorted targets you would expect for an older horse, and I'm sure, you know, many through New York, but they also announced how John Velasquez will replace Manny Franco with great ceremony. I guess it was important to humiliate Manny as much as possible. Whatever. You know, Mig got this right when he said the other day how, you know, so many people in Franco's ear about, you know, what to do with this horse. And, you know, this horse has been a source of, regarding Franco and Velasquez, has been a source of all kinds of fallout, left and right. This was the horse that resulted in John Velasquez and Angel Cordero falling out after, you know, Johnny's whole career with Angel. And because Johnny had worked the horse and, you know, told Angel, "I'd try to get me on this horse." And Angel explained, Manny's got the horse, and they're happy with Manny, and Manny's riding him. And I'm not pushing to get you on the horse. And that, you know, that's what drove the wedge between Angel and Johnny. And so here it is, you know, full circle, you know, close to a year later, and, you know, Velasquez will ride. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that you don't say anything. You don't have to say anything. You get moved toward your assignment, and yeah, when the time comes, say, you know, John Velasquez is riding, and you know, the great fanfare involved here seemed unnecessary. That's my, you know, that's my perspective. The situation yesterday, I'll tell you, Nick and I, and we'll go over it again today, when Nick Tamaro joins us. He had an even money morning line favorite in our last buck going into this, you know, first leg of that pick five yesterday. And as I said to Nick, I said, I just, you know, I know I've got to lean on him, but, you know, the rest of the sequence is tricky enough that I don't know. I was not confident at all. But, you know, just because of structure, tried to get through, and sure enough, our last buck was really never that. It moved in, you know, to try to challenge, and really never, you knew you were, I just shook my head. I mean, I knew we wasn't winning. You also had, you know, a situation where, you know, the stewards inquiry on the stretch run, and you could have certainly had a DQ. But anyway, mischief afoot for Jimmy Toner. And Burnin' Daylight Farms, Rebecca Galbraith, ends up, you know, winning and staying up. Dudley Square, you know, could have been elevated. But anyway, starts with a 10:40. And I don't know. I had the winner in my, you know, my top four, but I would have needed to have spent an additional $36 using Mischief Afoot as a C. And then, of course, you know, Run the Table with A's the rest of the way. The rest of the way included Tri-St. Lorenzo. You know, it ended up being that the two favorites, you know, were all you really needed in that curious maiden claimer. And Tri-St. Lorenzo with Louis Cardenas, the 7 pounds, ends up winning. So you've had a 10:40 and a 7:70. And those were the two New York races. The three Churchill races, the Amos and the Hoffman Family Tapiture Filly, beautiful trauma, just trounced that allowance field. Just ran off the screen, essentially. 2-1, which wasn't, you know, under the circumstances, wasn't bad. $6. And then you had, in that maiden race, you had the first-time starter, Abrogate, took all the money. Got bet down to 3-2 and then ran to it. And again, that was a spot where the obvious horses, in fact, the top four in order, the top four betting favorites, 3-2, 7-2, 9-2, 7-1. Abrogate, Zoom Up, Dame Cinco for Cherie, and Mine for Passion on the outside for Lynch. They run 1, 2, 3, 4. But Abrogate, really good. In fact, I should look up and see what kind of a fig. That was a very nice debut for the Lieblongs, an outwork filly out of a Burning Roma mare. How about that? And the Lieblongs paid $270,000 for this filly at Keeneland September last year. Looks like a nice filly. Zoom Up second, Dame Cinco debuted third, but that got you to the nightcap, and sure enough, it was the Ramsey Homebred, the Wicked Strong Colt, Telephone Talker, who almost got run down late. Attorney Tim at 17-1. Came running under Gabe Saez, and Nick and I were going back and forth keeping tabs, and he was live. He had a backup ticket and hit it with Telephone Talker. That was the only horse he had he was live to, and on a backup. Pays $1,642, and that's why I was miffed. Felt like, you know, structure had been a little different, you know, would have needed to spread wider in that first leg and could have gone narrow in the second. You know, that would have been the way to, that would have been the roadmap to hit it, but paid three times the parlay. So this is going to be fun. We're going to stay at it, and we'll try again today and through the weekend. So every day that through the end of the Churchill meet, Churchill Aqueduct Cross Country Pick 5. All right, so we'll keep swinging. Let's reach for Marty and get going, and I'll give you the rundown. Marty McGee, and in addition to Marty's recap, Breeders' Cup, we'll also get his Churchill outlook for the weekend. Scully, we'll get some plays from James, and we'll congratulate him and thank him for his two pushes and his analysis in the Betting Companion, Betmaker's Bonanza. And you know, the Betmaker Bonanza hasn't gotten as much attention as it deserves, because that extra $1 million, the $1 million bonus for the Haskell Derby Classic winner for Authentic. Jay Privman and Hammer. And Nick, who just sent me, good. Okay, Nick is good for late hour three. And as promised, Paul Matisse for his annual recap. We'll go through, see what came off the way, you know, Paul was anticipating, and what was a surprise and lessons learned. This is always great insight. So Marty McGee, James Scully, Priv, Hammer in hour two. Hammer also with a tremendous pair of betting companion plays. So we get to congratulate two of the contributors that helped you make money last weekend, a week ago today and tomorrow. So Marty McGee constantly helps you win money. Good morning, Mark.
Bick. Hey. What's happening, Bick?
Well, wanted to get to you and get some final Breeders' Cup thoughts. This is the one that we always parallel this to the scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they box up the analysis and they put it in that warehouse. That this is our show that takes a week's worth of recapping and puts a big bow on it and puts it up on the shelf. What'd you think?
I mean, it was a great weekend for Brad Cox, wasn't it? I mean, he probably won the Eclipse Award by doing what he did. I can't think of anybody more deserving. It's been a relatively down year for Chad, and you know, I guess the top three would be Cox and Baffert and Steve Asmussen. But yeah, I mean, it was just a hell of a weekend for him, and for him to do what Dick Mandela did in one day back in '03, for him to win four races was quite the feat. And you know, Brad, he's one of these guys, he doesn't like to do anything except for work with horses, and he works 16 and 18 hour days, and like a lot of the guys do, men and women do. And you know, hats off to him for that. I thought that Ann Pearl, and then Essential Quality, and then Nick's Go, and then Monomoy Girl, they were all fabulous. And to me, that's kind of the overarching theme of Breeders' Cup 2020.
Fair to say. And you know, we went through it with him the other morning, and what was interesting is how obviously the two-year-olds, they develop at their timing. Monomoy Girl was a year, you know, was more than a year in the making, and you know, a planned execution to, you know, to get her back to a distaff and to try to win a second one a year removed. And the one that kind of bubbled to the surface out of nowhere really was Nick's Go, who, you know, was kind of left on the side of the highway, you know, a horse that had real potential as a young horse, then kind of, you know, kind of meandered and lost his way, and you know, kind of resurrected in the last, you know, 5-6 months. And you know, I asked Brad straightforward. I said, you know, what do you think was key? And he gave Robbie Medina a lot of the credit for the work at the farm, getting him back healthy and preparing him for a return.
Wow. I was not aware of the backstory because, you know, it wasn't one of my races. All I know is that he ran huge, you know, to open the fall meet, and that kind of set him up nicely for another run. And you know, I can't think of anybody who was more dominant in their race than he was. He just went to the front, and that was the end of it. So yeah, you know, again, Brad is coming to Florida this year, I understand. He's among those who applied for stalls at either Gulfstream or Palm Meadows, and as you know, over the last 5-6 years he's been split between Fairgrounds and Oaklawn, but I guess he'll have a third outlet here. I would guess he might even leave horses here in Kentucky to run at Turfway, given how the
sure
horses are. So he'll be kind of like Steve Asmussen, a maker on four fronts now.
Well, you know, some of the other topics, and you mentioned your races. Let's actually, you know, get some, you know, some more detail from your perspective. And of course, the Filly and Mare Sprint, we talked about, you know, all the way leading up. It was always going to be one of the showcase races and one of the big confrontations. And didn't necessarily get a stretch battle as anticipated, but it sure did come down to the two anticipated performers, Gamine and Serengeti.
I mean, what a move by Johnny Velasquez, just to, I call it smooth her out, just to get her to go, get in that smooth rhythm, go ahead and let Serengeti Empress get the lead, and just kind of like lope behind her. And at the quarter pole, it was over, Steve. I mean, it was like they might have been on even terms then, but once Gamine had come out and you know, again, had gotten in that real smooth rhythm, that was it. And, yeah, it's a tribute to Bob Baffert that was, pretty much as soon as they ran the Kentucky Oaks, he was thinking about this race in particular. And for her to run as well as she did and set one of the many, I think there were six or seven track records set over the weekend, for her to run the way she did was, you know, that's to his credit. You know, nonetheless, the two medication overages that she was, you know, that one is final, one she has pending. But regardless of that, she's quite the animal. And, you know, Serengeti Empress, it's a pretty fitting and fine chapter to the final chapter to what Tom Amos did with her. I know he's proud of her. And so there was that race. And then, you know, the other races I had, Steve, were the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies on Friday. I thought for sure that Simply Ravishing would get the trip that VeeQuest ended up getting. I mean, I thought she would be the one to just sit there on the rail behind Day Out of the Office. And lo and behold, it was Rosario and VeeQuest who got that spot because Simply Ravishing, not one, but two McPeak fillies who stumbled right at the break and pretty much lost their best chance by doing that. So Simply Ravishing was, I thought she ran terrific. She was really closing well at the 16th pole, which, of course, is the finish line. And I thought either her or Girl Daddy, both of them were fairly unlucky to not get second in that race.
On this topic, actually, Marty, it occurs to me, because you did have two main track races, what did you make of the way the track, I don't want to use the words was set up, quote unquote, because I know that people seem to, you know, want to say, oh, on big days they cook the track and it's designed for records and everything else. Rarely do I really believe that. You know, that the track super is doing things to the track to create the situation. A lot of times, you know, there's sets of conditions and things that went into it, you know, earlier and you know, leading up to days. What was your read on the racetrack and what went on?
Well, first of all, what would be the impetus or what would be the motivation behind, you know, cooking the track and make it? Does it make the track super look good? No. I mean, it makes them look bad, really. So why would you want to do that? So that's why I throw that out the window. I've always been kind of confused or perplexed as to how or why this type of scenario unfolds as often as it does on these big weekends. So I really don't know how to address that other than what motivation would a guy have to have the track like that. I mean, surely they were trying to just make it fair and fast and do the things they normally do. It's the reason why it ended up with six main track records, I do not know.
I'm of the same mind that you know that there's no, you know, there's no conscious effort and that, you know, nobody is sitting there in the days leading up and saying, let's scrape it, let's make it a paved highway.
Why would a guy want to do that? I mean, yeah. It just comes back to him. I mean, are the headlines of track records going to reflect nicely on him? No. So, yeah, coincidentally, they happen to be the fastest horses in the world coming here for that weekend.
True.
You know, that might have something to do with it, but yeah.
Well, and we also, I mean, when you go through the charts, part of this is going through the charts and, you know, noting, for instance, that Whitmore came from off the pace. And, I mean, if I was rooting for Empire of Gold, and if the track was such a gold rail or paved highway, then maybe Declan Carroll could have, gotten Empire of Gold you know, to stay on. In the meantime, Whitmore comes from off the pace. Monomoy Girl was not exactly, you know, sitting right on top of the pace. You mentioned VQuist. I mean, VQuist was, you know, within striking distance, but had to come, you know, came up the rail very, very, you know, very heroically. I don't know. Somebody, who was it this week? Somebody midweek said that the track wasn't necessarily speed favoring as much as the track was just fast.
Yeah, I think it was Marcus. Marcus might have written that in the Marcus Hirsch in one of his columns in the in our esteemed publication DRF. So.
America's Turf Authority.
Yes, since 1894.
Since 1894.
Yeah, and then my other race that I had was, what else did I have? Juvenile Field. Oh, I had Distaff. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, Kenny, I talked to McPeak the day after the race on Sunday at Churchill, and, you know, it was pretty much the identical story as Simply Ravishing. When she got away stumbling and conceded, you know, those two or three critical lengths at the break and pretty much sacrificed position, what are you going to do? If you notice that nearing the quarter pole, here was Swiss Skydiver looming all of a sudden up the rail, like, oh, wow, is this going to be another Robbie Alvarado terrific move? But as Kenny said, Robbie had to use her too much to get there. And for the last quarter of a mile, she didn't have anything. So it was Monomoy Girl, you know, had been conserved to that point, and that was that. But it's good to know they're both going to run next year, with Spencer having bought Monomoy Girl and going back to Brad. I assume she'll get a little time. I haven't really read up on that, but I assume she'll come to him at Fairgrounds at some point. And then Kenny told me that Swiss Skydiver is going to stay at Magdalena for a little while, and I asked him if she's going to go to Summerfield, which is his farm down there near Ocala, for a while, and then come to him at either Gulfstream or Palmettos or Payson. He changes up every year on me, so it's hard to keep track. But at some point, she will come back to him, and I assume they'll all point for races like the Apple Blossom, et cetera, you know, get going in April or so.
Well, Marty, beside the main track races that you covered, and I should note, I just got an advisory from Scully, brings up a point. Sleepy Eyes Todd in the Lafayette came from dead last after a half mile. So there's another horse that rallied, and so there's a little bit more evidence on that front. Marty, nice Breeders' Cup for you. Four on top winners, Golden Pal, Essential Quality, Monomoy, and Nick's Go. And I noted that you also incorporated some key prices for underneath, or, you know, horses that people may have grabbed onto. You had Glass Slippers involved, and you were one of the few people that included Dunbar Road. Which made the triple for those that you know, had Valiance. We kind of pushed Valiance all week a little bit, you know, based on appearance. But nice job all around. You also had Don Pearl involved and VQuist, so good job on the cup.
Well, thank you a lot. I ended up losing money because I sucker in on the multis, and the maker winner in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf hurt me. I don't know why I, like everybody else, seemed to dismiss him. But I could have caught that pick four nicely, and my one misgiving is not using the 16 horse in the the one that was 77-1, because I just like to throw in those AEs just for the hell of it. So yeah, and I just, you know, got a little too cheap on that. So yeah.
Now, the multis hurt me too. I've said all week, the rushing falls losing just absolutely. It was like a snowmobile hitting. You know, hitting a mud patch. I mean, that was
a tough beat too.
Oh, please. When she went by, you know where I was standing. I you know, when she went by, I thought, oh, right, she's going to win this. And then, you know,
It happens every day. It's like part of the law. I have to get beat a nose, a head, or a neck at some point every day.
You also, there was plenty of postscript to have to worry about and discuss, including the timing. And I saw where you, after the press release went out from Equibase and Keeneland, clarifying it didn't take as long as Secretariat's Preakness, but we did get clarification on.
I pretty much just regurgitated the press release. But you know, this has been a tough few months for the timing systems of America, of the racetracks of America. They've had some snafus, et cetera, going on there. So it's And my buddy Steve Peary, who's he's one of the Equibase guys, he's been putting out a lot of fires of late.
Well, final thoughts. I guess we'll be back there in 2 years, and I'll throw in one thing because you know you were on hand. I'm at least modestly troubled by the situation without the public. I mean, the faster we get, I don't care, 25%. 40% capacity, something. But keeping people out of these events is getting tiresome. And I
would agree. You know, there were a lot of people there. It seemed like, you know, I would estimate anywhere from 4,000 to 6,000. And you know, so was there social distancing going on? Yes. Were there masks being worn? Yes. Why couldn't we have another 10,000 people in that, you know, rather spacious thing? I mean, these things, the Breeders' Cup's for the fans. I mean, the Derby's for the fans. I mean, we all started out as fans, and, you know, I think that Churchill's taking a step in the right direction, even though the COVID here, the numbers are spiking again here in Kentucky. Churchill is permitting people to come to the races, knowing how big the place is and how people can spread out accordingly. So, but I'm like you, let's get the fans back because, you know, when I go down to Gulfstream this winter, it was so depressing last winter, you know, mid-March when they declared everybody off limits. And it just sure would be nice to get back to a sense of normalcy with in this game with the fans with us.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Churchill, because now the scene shifts, and we've got plenty to look forward to through to the Clark. And I've been talking about the cross-country pick five, Aqueduct and Churchill, and, of course, the Fox show, America's Day at the Races, featuring Churchill Racing on a daily basis, along with Aqueduct, so you can watch it all meet on Fox. Fox Sports 1, and some thoughts about the weekend here coming in.
Well, we got the only feature, first stake they're going to run here since, opening weekend or whatever. It's the Mrs. Revere. It's tomorrow. It's race 10 of 11. They'll probably be running it under the lights because its post time is about 5:30-something. And it's somewhat of a unique race, Steve, in that there's only one speed horse in there, and it's so obvious. Her name is Positive Danger. She's subpar in terms of the buyers and some other key elements, but she is going to be loping on the lead, you would think. And so she was such a standout in that regard that I actually called Tony Granitz early this morning. He was sitting on a horse at Indiana Grand where he said it was not very, he said it was nasty and kind of freezing. And but she will be a long shot, and she will have the lead early. And I look for, actually, I think it's my best bet on the day, is Stidham's filly, Princess Grace, to come and get her, because that move she made in the Valley View was just eye-catching, where she just bolted to the lead and looked like she had it won. And here came Maker with Stunning Sky and Santana to beat her. So I would like to think that Princess Grace will get first run after going past Positive Danger. Maybe the Paul McGee filly past the plate up for a piece of it. So I've got it, Princess Grace past the plate and Stunning Sky tomorrow in the Mrs. Revere at Churchill Downs.
The Mrs. Revere, grade two. So nice opportunity. And the sequence, the pick five sequence, starts with a turf sprint, second level allowance, and some familiar names in there, including Mucho, who's still for Mott, 12-1, who's still trying to, you know, kind of recapture some of his three-year-old mojo. You got a 50 claimer going a mile, the flat one-turn mile. Then comes a first-level allowance, also a mile, fillies and mares, with Ocean Breeze for the Catman, your 8-5 favorite. Then the stake, and then the sequence ends with a two-year-old maiden group. And you know, yesterday, quite a flashy debut for that Lieblong Asmussen runner in the eighth, Abrogate.
Yeah, I saw where you congratulated the Lieblongs on that on Twitter there, Bick. But yeah, that was. They knew about that horse.
That horse,
it looked like all the other first timers are there, but lo and behold, the horse was like 6-5 for a long way, and then, you know, just airballed. Got a great ride from Santana. Really conserved it. Kind of, he's got. There's so many good jockeys here, I'm telling you, and he's one of them. But yesterday in the second race, by the way, we had a semi-bridge jumping situation where the show prices came back. $16, $13, and $20. And we had some 1-5 shot that just didn't run a jump. So, but, you know, the show pool was only $24,000. I just kind of assumed that somebody had laid in for $50,000 or so. But I guess the pools are that small that just the aggregate of the chalk bettors wanting to get their 210 made for that kind of situation.
Quick note, a 73 buyer for Abrogate. I was curious and just checked. And I do want to also mention that other mile winner because it's one of our favorite people out there. And I had mentioned his birthday on Wednesday, Jimmy Baker. With that Medaglia d'Oro filly, Barista won that maiden race at 7-1.
That was a nice win because beat a pretty nice filly that Le Perru was on, and for Rusty Arnold. And Jimmy, man, you cannot. I left him out of my sequence yesterday. I'm still mad at myself for that. So, you know, I'm trying to make it up with Justin Thomas here at 10-1 in the Masters.
I love it. I didn't look at Sunday's card yet. What's going on Sunday?
We got three allowances. Maybe it's going to rain. It's not going to rain today or tomorrow. We'll be on the turf today and tomorrow. But there is a really nice, I got my overnight here. We got three allowances, and one of them is a $95,000 turf sprint in which your girl, Michelle Lovell, has change of control in against the likes of A Bit of Both and some other really nice filly mare turf sprinters. Conspicuous by her absence because she's retired is Morticia, but this is the kind of wide-open allowance that she would have been in. But let's hope that the conditions are such this race can go on the turf. It's the 7th of 10 tomorrow, Sunday, with the real nice turf sprint allowance for fillies and mares.
Well, as it happens, Bit of Both is also a favorite as well. May have to put those two together. Bit of Both coming out of Guardians of the Galaxy. It's one of my favorite. Tina and I use that line with each other. Bit of Both all the time. Whenever we're trying to choose stuff, we'll say Bit of Both. There's also a one-mile maiden race for two-year-olds. Looking at that group, goes as the fifth. Just kind of thumbing through that, a few that have run, and one firster, Ghost Zapper.
Yeah. I've got Anti-Gravity in there for a guy named Jerry Hollendorfer, who has suddenly reared his head here on this circuit. I mean to go talk to him and see what his plans are and, you know, what his status is and, you know, just what he's got in mind. I know that he loves doing this, and here he is.
Excellent. Excellent. I haven't talked to him. We've got to get the Dorf on. There's also that maiden race. There's a second division, essentially, goes as the eighth as well for a mile for the boys. So it does look like a nice card on Sunday, and we're going to be playing these cross-country pick fives each other. And then, of course, we'll start to monitor toward the Clark and toward the Stars of Tomorrow Stakes later in the month, Marty. Considering how late the Breeders' Cup was, it feels like, you know, we're right on top of Thanksgiving here on Friday the 13th of November.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start canvassing those races, I guess, sometime next week. And I couldn't tell you right now who's running the Clark. I thought maybe they would think about it with Art Collector, given how, you know, that just regained some of his lost luster. But no, they said he bled a little bit in the dirt mile, and so that's in the Friday racing form. So I can't really tell you who's going to run back in that. I know that Brett Calhoun's not running any of his good ones, and so, yeah.
Interesting. So, by my standards, going to take a pause here?
Yeah, they're doing that with him. They're doing, you know, with Silver Dust and with Mr. Money. None of them will run back in the Clark. Or, actually, you know what? He might have told me. Well, it's in the form. You'd have to read it. Maybe.
Pick up a form, folks.
I don't know what. Yeah, I think it was in yesterday.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks for everything.
Yeah, you throw too much at me at once there, Barry.
I know. I can usually do that, and you handle it with aplomb.
Yeah.
Marty, great job. I had Nicole on to report on the sales the other day, too, and the two of you and Mike Welsh, and just a great job, you know, handling, you know, all the on-track priorities and emergencies at Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup. So, well done.
I appreciate it, Vic. Thanks.
Marty McGee, everybody, DRF McGee. And when we get to next Friday, it's Vic McGee Privman birthday season kicks off next Friday. First me, then Marty, then Jay. All within 17 days in 1959. So we're going to stay right here to the top of the hour because standing by James Scully, Twinspires/Brisnet. And first order of business with James is to congratulate him on terrific contributions to the At the Races Breeders' Cup Betting Companion, brought to you by Betmakers Bonanza. And the Bonanza came through, too, with $1 million. But so did Scully. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, thank you very much. It was a great, I thought, 2 days of racing at Keeneland. I think Keeneland's a great host for the Breeders' Cup, and look forward to coming back in 2022.
Let's talk about your two, first of all, your two plays. You, today and Hammer as well, get a chance to, you know, take some bows, and it started for you in the turf sprint with you know, a feel that Glass Slippers had to be, you know, at least played with or worked into the approach.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think a lot of the Europeans that come over for the Breeders' Cup turf sprint, the race is just over before they get going. But Glass Slippers was a filly that had shown that she might have the acceleration needed to handle the 5.5 furlong tight course for Euros trip at Keeneland. And sure enough, I mean, she made a phenomenal move, I thought, to slip through traffic in the stretch and finish with a rush. I expected her to run well, but I think she was fortunate that Wet Your Whistle completely blew the start, because I thought that horse really ran really well for second. Coming off a wire-to-wire win in the Belmont Turf Sprint, to be dead last like he was, looked like he had no chance. And that, kudos to the runner-up as well.
Well put. And I ran into Mike Trombetta and Marie at well after the race, actually, later in the day, and realized that, you know, I said you ran well, right? He said we were second. He said they were thrilled. The thing is, if it wasn't for Tom Eaves's pretty incredible ride, well then Wet Your Whistle ends up winning that race. I mean, it took some real heroics from Eaves.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, she was a classy filly. I mean, she wasn't like under the radar. At least I didn't think won a Group One in Ireland this year, and with exiting a Group One in France. So Tom Eaves was a regular rider, and he came through. We saw a lot of these Euros have to play musical chairs with their jockeys, and it worked out as well for them. So it was just a big day on Saturday for the Euros, winning all four turf races.
Well, you also were the featured analyst for the distaff, and to tell everybody, first of all, on the turf sprint, James actually built it as a $50 budget, but I kicked it up and doubled it. $10 win, basically saver bets on Oleksandra and Glass Slippers, brought back $112. So that was James's sort of a cover bet. And then in the distaff, though, you took one of those punches with Monomoy Girl with a $50 win suggestion, and then you had the nice $10 exacta with Valiance. And so between the two, $213 on the exacta and $100 on the $50 win ticket. So $313 back on $100 worth of plays in the distaff.
Yeah, and I've talked about it on the show before. You get an even money favorite like Monomoy Girl, and you don't think she's going to lose or he's going to lose. There is an opportunity. I mean, to me, I was playing against Swiss Skydiver and Dunbar Road underneath her. I took the top two finishers from the spinster. They both ran triple digit BristleNet speed ratings, Valiance and Always Candy. And Valiance at $2 exacta with an even money shot paid $42.60. So, I'd had a tough day on Saturday. I didn't use all in the mile, and number 15 Order of Australia beat me. So I played $30 straight exactas, and those were my only bets. I played a $5 late pick three that I hit because I threw authentic in, given I just thought he might get the trip. But that really saved my day with that Valiance running such a big race for second for Todd Pletcher.
And that's really a demonstration. We try to stress this, particularly going into Breeders' Cup, because there's all the 14 opportunities, and you don't necessarily have to, be put off in a spot where you say, well, Swiss Skydiver or Monomoy Girl are going to win, and I can't make any money here. That you just can don't be dismissive that way, because you can find an angle on it, and in this case, being aware of Valiance and saving a wind saver on Glass Slippers. I mean, these are the kinds of little nuances that when you add everything up after the weekend, a lot of times they'll make a difference. They'll make a difference between losing and at least breaking even or winning.
Yeah, absolutely. Kudos to Brad Cox. I talked about in a little recap that I wrote today of the 14 winners, or wrote yesterday at BristleNet.com. But, that she came back better. I mean, missing her entire four-year-old season, you don't see many thoroughbreds that come back even at the same level, much less better. And the one thing about her, I was there at Churchill for the La Troyenne, and I read, workout reports and talked to people that were watching her train, and just physically, I mean, she was just in absolutely perfect condition and just looked so phenomenal in the flesh on the track leading up to the race. I mean, you just can't say enough about the job Brad Cox did with Monomoy Girl.
Yeah, and I kind of stressed that with him the other morning where he said, you had this plan and, it just so happened that we talked to him literally the day she came back to the barn. When I asked about Monomoy Girl, he said, what's funny, she literally just got here, she got there the day before. And, and he said, we're going to ease into it, and everything is geared toward, winning another distaff. And, that's literally a hour-by-hour monitoring. I mean, you have a horse like that, and you're literally every morning you're going over them, and every single day, you know, you're sweating out every exercise and then every timed work, and then leading into the various races and getting through those. And it's really a point well taken that, you know, to pull this off
is exceptional. Yeah, he was under a lot of stress last year. I mean, she was back in his barn. Everybody thought she was going to run in the apple blossom.
That's right.
And he was trying to get her back. He was galloping her and looking to breeze her. And obviously, something wasn't right. And, you know, that had to put a lot of stress on him and his staff, you know, just trying to get her back. They had to probably be wondering, you know, if she would ever come back the same after she left his barn last year.
Well, aside from these two spots, what else? What went right? What were you impressed with? What would you like to have back?
With the classic, you know, I was touting Tisloff, my top pick, and Tom's the top. And I thought, you know, the more we get into it on Friday and on Saturday, I didn't think that, you know, there was this, you know, real speed bias on the track. But I did think that if you're a good horse and had got the right trip, it obviously would play well to you. And just looking at that classic, I mean, the race just played out exactly like the Kentucky Derby did. Let Authentic get out there by a couple length on the lead, be clear on the backstretch like he was, and he's just too good. And the thing about him is that in both of his losses, the Santa Anita Derby and in the Preakness where he ran second both times, he didn't make the early lead. He made the lead in all the six of his wins. Like I said, I knew he was a very good horse. I thought he was good up to 9 furlongs. I was completely wrong about that, especially if you're letting him dictate the action. It didn't matter if that race was at Belmont or Santa Anita, he would have won that classic every time with that pace set up.
Yeah.
Another race I was really happy with Whitmore. You know, I did not use him in my pick threes or pick fours multi-race bets, but just, you know, with Ron Moquette, I remember 2 years ago in the summer when Ron Moquette was hospitalized and he was really sick and nobody knew exactly what his condition was and there was a lot of concern, and he came back from that. I mean, I think it's some scarsoidosis or something like that, but I thought it was such an emotional scene for him in the winner circle. And you take a horse like Whitmore, who's running in he ran next to last in the 2016 Kentucky Derby, Whitmore did, and he was making his fourth attempt in the sprint. He's overlooked at 18-1, and he just ran a phenomenal race. I mean, he was 10th, you know, after a quarter mile going down the back stretch. You look at how that race played out. I think if Friends Fire has a clean trip in the stretch, and he was 11th early, the two closers in that race run 1-2, because, you know, I just think the traffic cost Frenzy Fire second. That race played for closers through and through, and I was really happy for Whitmore, 7-year-old gelding. I thought Gamine was the most, like, hair-raising, like, performance of the entire Breeders' Cup. Just phenomenal. You know, Marty McGee was talking earlier. He called it the Johnny Velasquez, like, smooth move or something like that. But people may not remember, but he perfected, I mean, he didn't perfect it there, but he's put that exact same move on display winning the Kentucky Derby. He was on Always Dreamin', who broke from post five in 2017, and State of Honor, this 50-1 long shot, came up to his outside. He was on the inside going by the wire. As they go in the first turn, John B. just eased back just for a split second, let that horse go, and he was immediately on his side, you know, just like on his to the outside of him, about a half length behind. He made that exact same move with Gamine in the Philly Mare Sprint. It worked out perfectly. I'll say this about Essential Quality on Friday. It wasn't the flashiest of performances, you know. I mean, he got a triple-digit speed rating. But to me, that's a horse that's just, like, getting it done right now on just his, like, raw ability. It couldn't be a more exciting prospect, in a sense, for the Kentucky Derby. Because, you know, a lot of times these two-year-olds, you'll see them come along, and they're like, running these huge races, and they're giving everything they got. But to me, Essential Quality looks like a horse that will have more to offer moving forward. And for him to, you know, win in that fashion he did by about a length, you know, having to work for it from off the pace like he did after two front-running trips, I couldn't be more impressed with him, you know, as a Kentucky Derby prospect at this point in time.
Yeah, he'll go into the winter. He impressed me too. I was a little dubious, and I had a different approach to the race. But yeah, he's the goods.
And you look, and I'll just mention a couple things real quick. Bequist, right? She's come. You know, you look at last year in California, four New York-based horses won. Three of them were with Chad Brown, and the other one, Dino Rosso, with Pletcher. There's no New York-based horses that won this year. Seven in Kentucky, four Euros. Baffert had two of them. But Bequist, who's based at Parks, like Spun the Run was last year, she was coming off a second in that for Zet. If there's one race in New York that has value as a Breeders' Cup race prep race, it's the Frazette Stakes. It has produced three of the last four winners of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, and two of them, Caledonia Road and Bequist, ran second. So I'll say that about that race. I'll say this about Audaria. That, you know, I was really happy for Dermot Weld. I mean, he's a big supporter of the Breeders' Cup, being like winless 0-16 going in this year, I thought was pretty cool. And that Prix de l'Opera, I mean, any handicappers that were keyed into that race coming into the Breeders' Cup did really well because it produced both Tarnawa and Audaria. So those are some quick thoughts, Steve.
Outstanding. I appreciate it, James, and great job helping players, the listeners that utilize the Betting Companion and score out both the turf sprint and in the distaff. Let's talk a little Churchill action or anything else that you got your mind on this weekend.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit tomorrow. I'll look at the race 7, the first race of the late pick 5. That's a race that is going to has this Born Great, right, who's the morning line favorite. I think has to work out a trip from the inside post. Posted really nice, recorded really nice wins, made an entry level allowance at Kentucky Downs. But he faces the tough rivals in this race, 5.5 for long turf sprint. I like number 10, Holiday Stone. He basically two back at Kentucky Downs, ran against a much more formidable field, won it going away by about 5 lengths for Eddie Keneally. And last time he was in that Belmont turf sprint. Wet your whistle did lead wire to wire, but there was a loose horse that threw the jockey. He was all, you know, he affected a little bit of the early going. And I thought Holiday Stone made a good run to be second in mid-stretch within striking range. Came up a little bit short, but he's going to appreciate dropping him for, you know, facing these optional claiming rivals. And at 6-1 on the morning line, he looks pretty good to me with Florent Giroux. Race number 9 is a race where 3-year-old fillies going a mile, entry-level allowance. And this race has a lot of fillies that like to race up close, but I think Palio Flag, number 2, she just has not broken as cleanly as, you know, as she needed to, I thought, in those last two races. I think she's eligible to put it together with a better break, and if she breaks running, I think she's going to lead wire to wire in race number 9, so I like the 2, Palio Flag. That race has a big favorite in Ocean Breeze, and I just, you know, that filly, you know, is multiple stakes place Ocean Breeze. But I'm just not big keen on how she's finished in her last two races at Churchill and Keeneland, and I'm willing to try to beat her at short price.
Nice. What are you doing in the Revere?
In the Revere, I mean, I look at the race, and I think Hendy Woods is the horse to beat. I'm willing to excuse that effort in the Queen Elizabeth last time. You know, she was inside that day, and, you know, she was in a decent position midway on the far turn, and then just, you know, basically just ran evenly to the wire. But those races 2 and 3 back, where she won that Indiana Grand Stakes and then ran a clear second to Sharing in the Edgewood, I think are good enough to win the race. I'm not sure really what to make of the Valley View. I mean, the race sort of runs through that. If you believe in Stunning Sky and Princess Grace, then, you know, you're going to be on them. I'm sort of going the other way. I'm also going to use number 2, Positive Danger. He might be a little outclassed in this spot, but if Princess Grace doesn't go with Positive Danger, this filly is absolutely capable of being clear and getting just a dream trip on the front end. Yeah, you can excuse that race 2 starts back. She had something go wrong with her equipment or something like that. Her last 2 turf races, she's won them both. most positive danger has. So a little bit intriguing at 15-1 on the morning line.
Well, you know, an interested party is mentioning the one problem is that Declan Carroll's not aboard. That's actually Declan who just sent me that. So, yeah.
I know. That's sort of harsh, you know, because he won that stake race on her. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And then in the last race, I like the speed in there from the inside, Grace's Secret. I think she's coming off two pretty good races that decade that beat her. She ran third first time out. That decade who beat her was the California Chrome Filly for Steve Asmussen, who broke her maiden last time at Odds On. And then last time at Churchill, she ran a close second. I just think she's got a speed advantage in the finale. I like number two, Grace's Secret.
Well, there's a good look at. I think you skipped over. What did you do? You skipped over the eighth, right?
Oh, I skipped over the eighth. You know, I own a piece of Eskin Ford.
I know.
So I hate to sort of think against him. You know, I did look at the field a little bit. I mean, that lonely private looks capable of a good trip on the outside. But yeah, I don't want to pick against Eskin Ford.
I'm always in that same boat when our horses run and we're involved in only when I'm absolutely forced because it's a, you know, it's in a sequence. Do I do it? But I know that feeling. How about a last second Friday push, the big LSFP?
All right, I'm going to go with number eight, Marzo, 6-1 in race nine today at Churchill Downs for Mike Maker and Ricardo Santana, the combination from Fire at Will. This horse got the 47 lengths last time in a bog, though, at Sword Dancer. He can handle turf with some give to it. His last start at Churchill Downs, he went a mile. He got beat ahead. Mile and a 16th, not worried about the cutback and distance at all. I like Marzo on the front end.
Excellent. And that ninth part of today's cross-country pick five, we'll talk more about it when Nick Tamaro joins us to start hour three. James, great work through the cup, and Ed was with us on Wednesday. Also had a terrific weekend and delivered a lot of great information and help to players everywhere, and Vance and Kelly Riley and everybody at the Briss team and the Twin Spires blog roll. Well done, and good luck this weekend. We'll talk next week.
All right, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Thank you, buddy. James_Scully111. Let's take a break. Just past the top of the hour, Jay Privman standing by on the West Coast, and we'll go through the Breeders' Cup with Jay as well, get his final thoughts, also the fallout and the retirements and everything else, the news from yesterday with Tis the Law. We'll get a little Del Mar, too. We'll see. Haven't had a chance really to talk much at all about the Del Mar action, so we'll get some home game commentary from DRF Privman. Jay joins us next at the races, hour two, weekend preview at this Friday. And I should mention, I want my last couple of chances. I want to thank Oaklawn for sponsoring all the Breeders' Cup coverage, the lead up for 6 weeks and through this week. And soon enough, we'll be getting excited about the Oaklawn season in January. Back after this, Jay Privman joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't miss a second of thrilling live racing from Aqueduct this fall on America's Day at the Races on Fox Sports. Watch Maggie Wolfendale, Andy Serling, and the entire All-Star cast bring you the best of fall racing live from Aqueduct. For full TV listings, visit NYRA.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.